long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that had been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome to the FDH Lounge. It's mini episode number 13 of the Lounge. We're happy to be here, hosted again on the Sportsology platform. Many thanks to our friend Russ Cohen. He has left me, Rick Morris, in charge of the controls here tonight. So I want to thank Russ again for his hospitality and having hosted some of our Lounge mini episodes. And we have a tremendous one coming up for you here tonight. We have a gentleman that we have been looking to book for the program for quite some time. He is a former NFL player and an author of a book, a great book, called The Next Level, A Game I Had to Play. He tells a very interesting story of really having overcome some long odds to be able to make it to the NFL, both in terms of his professional pedigree as he was coming up the ladder from playing small college football to what he had endured previously in life to an interesting pro career, capping with a moment of great triumph, really, when he was in Tampa Bay going up against his former team, the Detroit Lions, and he really had just a wonderful, inspirational story to tell as far as lessons learned and what he's drawn from it. I speak, of course, of Vernon Turner. So I believe we have him on the phone lines now. Vernon, are you with us?
Yeah, you got me. Hey, how
okay,
you doing?
Great to have you on, Vernon. Tremendous to have you with us here. I really enjoyed your book greatly, and it's really an inspirational story that you tell in there. Can you kind of set the story for us here of what led up to your decision to share your story and to be able to leverage it for people for their greater understanding and any lessons that they can draw from it?
Well, I'll tell you what, Rick. It all stemmed back. Actually, back in Tampa, Florida. It was prior to me returning the punt for a touchdown. Well, at that point, no one has ever returned a punt or kick for a touchdown in the franchise history. And there was some big, major expectation and build-up prior to that 1994 season, because everyone who was in Tampa, everyone that was part of the Tampa Bay staff, teammates, and so on, they all believed that me, VT, Vernon Turner, was going to do this. But the whole buildup of it was tremendous, especially during training camp. And I had this reporter by the name of Dan Brady. He was a television news reporter, and he took the time to do a pre-interview with me prior to the actual interview, and he got to know my background a little bit. Well, during the course of that interview, he asked me, you know, V, you know, I know a little bit about your history, your background. How do you feel right now about the expectations and where you're at right now? And I can't believe I said this. This was back 18 years ago. I said, Dan, you know what? When I'm retired and I'm bored as heck and sitting back, I'm going to write a book about my life and how I got to this point, and it's going to be a bestseller. And just looking back on everything that I had to do to get to where I am, get to where I was, and even where I am now, it's Steven Spielberg couldn't have written this script, Rick.
Well, it is very unique, and again, you're and every story that gets told, of course, has its own different shades to it. But we have had a number of authors on the program who've really had to kind of scrape down and made the decision to tell some personal things here. So I guess for a story like yours, my sense is that it's all or nothing. It's hard to kind of hold back really too much. But what kind of a thought process was it for you when you made the decision? Again, I think you pretty much have to go all in to tell a story like this. But did you really struggle with too many of the elements in doing that with the honesty?
Oh, my goodness, Rick. I really had to do some soul searching, some gut checking, the whole nine yards prior to me actually writing the book, because anyone who knows me, I'm a very private man. I'm a very private person. I keep everything in check and in-house. And for me to do a project of this magnitude, to expose my life, not only my life, but my family's life, the way I did in this book, It was totally out of my character and out of my comfort zone. So I really had to convince myself that this was the right thing to do. And honestly, it really was, because it was a bunch of things rolled up into one that I'm getting out of this book. Number one is therapy. I had things built up and locked tight in my mind and heart for over 30 years that I refused to think about as far as my past, my upbringing. It was a very difficult time for me and my family. And it was some horrific things that occurred. And there's just some things that I refused to even think about or talk about. So for me to get to the point to write this book, it had to have some really depth, some meaning to move forward with this thing. It has to have some substance. This project has to help somebody out there. That's the only reason why I decided to do it. There's going to be some people out there that read this book, and they're going to be in similar circumstances, and they're going to be at the same crossroads that I was in all those years ago. And because of what I did, whether I did or didn't do, hopefully it'll help them. And hopefully inspire them, because I had no business playing in the National Football League, let alone, I really had no business playing. But it's amazing the heart and determination will do, and the circumstances will do to get you to do things that what everyone else say that you can't do. So again, it's an unbelievable story, a task and tale, and I pray that everybody gets an opportunity to go to www.vernonturner.com and get the next level of game I had to play.
Absolutely, and you know, it's all the more remarkable as you describe yourself being a very private person for you to have been able to get this out in that way, because I can say, as somebody who read and enjoyed the book, there are plenty of wrenching details in here, and you did it, but it's a thing where it seemed like towards the end of your answer there, you seemed to be anticipating my follow-up question in terms of leveraging this for anybody else that might be under similar circumstances. It sounds like that's what gave you the impetus to carry through with this thing here, that it might be difficult for you personally, but it sounds like, A, it probably was therapeutic because it forced you to confront these things, but even more importantly, in terms of other people, B, maybe making a difference in helping them fight through and maybe helping there to be more Vernon Turners that can overcome.
Yeah, there are so many messages in this book, in this story, that I can't... It's too many, Rick. You know, one of the main things that I know, that I realized what this book became for me, was a huge apology letter to my parents back in the day. I mean, the sacrifices that my family made, the sacrifices that my parents made to get me to where I am now, it breaks my heart. It really does, because I wasn't the best of kids in regards to my mindset, my thought process. You know, my mom, I wished, and there were times, because my mom, she was, God bless her. I mean, it breaks my heart to even think about the things that she went through. You know, she was heavily addicted to drugs, and she was a prostitute. And the reason why she became the way she was because of things that, an event that occurred back when she was 18 years old, very horrific. And, you know, it just breaks my heart to know what she went through and the sacrifices that she made at the time that I didn't know. And I used to, it was times when I was wishing my mother dead, you know, and then it wasn't until after the fact, and I found out all the sacrifices she made to have me even on this earth. I wasn't even supposed to be here. I was here under horrific circumstances. So my goal is to make sure I leave a legacy and leave a name that my mom will be proud of. So,
Vernon, I think this book is a major, major, major part of what that's going to be, because, you know, you do succeed in getting that across, and I think it does honor what your mother went through and your stepfather and everyone in the course of dealing with stuff here. And, you know, not to get too political on anybody, but the one thing you referenced there does kind of go to something that I've always thought, too. It, you know, when we talk about, you know, quote-unquote choices that there are there, and a lot of people that want to carve out, you know, say an exception for, you know, rape or anything like that, rape or incest with, you know, abortion there. I mean, it sounds harmless in theory, but again, you know, your mother made a choice to bring you into the world that, as you indicate, most people probably wouldn't have done, and you're here because of it. I mean, I can't help but reflect on how profound that is and what it says about other people under similar circumstances, you know, choices that they could make.
It was probably the most selfless act I can ever imagine a human being doing, and being in a situation that she was in, and her making the decision that she made. You know, I look back, and no one would have faulted her for giving me up for abortion. I mean, having an abortion or giving me up for adoption. And no one would have faulted her under the horrific circumstances that she occurred. Not one person. So for her, she is the best mom I can ever have, you know, ever. I mean, again, this is something that I'm probably going to take to my grave as far as having a broken heart, because I never really showed a full appreciation for my mom and for my dad. And I can't call him my stepdad. I referenced that in the book. He will never be considered a stepfather to me. He's my father. He's my dad. And the sacrifices that I found out that he made all those years ago. Again, I had a lot of ignorance in my mind and heart back all those years ago. And he never felt appreciated by me until the last couple of years of his life. And that breaks my heart, too. So, you know, there are just things that's going to haunt me for the rest of my life. And I don't want anybody, and I mean anybody, Rick, going through that.
Sure. Well, and again, hopefully this book can again help lead to some better outcomes for people. The one thing that I can say about what you just said there, I know there's a tremendous gulf sometimes between what the head knows and what the heart or the gut really kind of understands. I mean, the one thing that I can say from what I've observed is there's no way that kids, when they're dealing with adverse circumstances, they're never, you know, we can sit back, we can second guess, we can play Monday morning quarterback, but kids are just not equipped for that, Vernon, to really grasp that at the time. You can sit here and say, well, you know, I should have appreciated my mom more, whatever. All you saw were the circumstances you described in the book. And I know you know that in your head, but it's probably a different matter altogether for that to migrate to your heart and, you know, for how you look at it and you look back on what you thought.
And that's the thing, that you hit it right on the head. My mind knows it. My mind knows what reality is and what things are. I mean, I knew I was a kid. I know that, you know, kids don't comprehend certain things at that time. And, you know, I understand all of that. Trust me, I've heard it 100 million times. But what my mind knows and what my heart feels are two completely, totally different things. And that's the thing that I fight with. And I hope and pray to God that eventually I come to peace with it. And I would never talk about this stuff until I actually wrote this book. And actually writing the book was the hardest thing I ever had to do. I mean, I went through so many emotions. I locked my room. I locked myself in my office, upstairs of my office, up in my house. And I was up there for several days. I, of course, bathroom, shower, so on and so forth, and sleep. But I didn't stop until I actually finished this book. And you talk about emotions. It was a nightmare, to be honest with you, doing this whole thing. But at the end of the day, I know that some good is going to come out of this project. I know it.
Well, clearly, you had some other influences beyond them. Some names in the book that are known to the general public. Walter Payton, who helped you tremendously, you said, with your training, with some advice. Who, by the way, I have to say, additionally, is somebody I always looked up to as well. I really hated to see him lose the all-time rushing record. I hated seeing that happen. I was a big Walter Payton fan, and you mentioned being mentored by James Lofton and Coach Fred Olivieri, who really first saw something in you as a football player. So you had some really tremendous influences, it seems, as you were going along the way developing yourself.
That's a major understatement, Rick. I tell you what, from Pop Warner football, there was a coach named Bill Thatcher, and he was the one that launched me as a young man, to become a young man. he was the one that made it known that I will never quit on anything, because I quit on his Pop Warner football team because of the things that were happening back at home, my situation, my life home situation, and I ended up quitting. And he tracked me down in a park, and he talked to me, and he says, one thing you will not do, young man, you will not quit, because you start this pattern now, it'll affect you all throughout the way, all throughout your life. He said, you will not quit. And if I have to bring you to practice and pick you up, or just the time for practice so you can make practices, oh, that's what we're going to do, but you will not quit. And he was the one that actually launched my mindset. He's the one that taught me how to harness all this aggression and take it out on the football field. Most of the time when I played, Rick, I played pretty pissed off. I played mm-hmm. very angry. I would had a little man's complex. I mean, I really play sometimes with bad intentions because I just had so much built up, you know, with my home life and everything that was happening. I used football. Football pretty much saved my life, but it all started with Bill Thatcher. Then Fred Oliveri came into play and took over, and he's pretty much my world. I mean, if it wasn't for that man, I don't know what would have happened to me or my family, you know. And then, you know, you go into college, and Coach Ken Sparks, Carson Newman College, you know, he taught me the spiritual aspect of my of me, you know, that it doesn't matter what happens, as long as you do your best and you put your faith in God, and all everything else is going to fall into place, you know. Then I go into the pros, and all these people that I worked along the side with the best athletes in the world, Barry Sanders, James Lofton, Andre Reed, you know, all these guys. You know, I can go on and on and on that I've learned from. It's an unbelievable tale that I wouldn't have thought in a million years that I can actually say that, you know, I did it, you know.
It was an incredible ride, certainly. And again, for a man of your size, something that just kind of occurred to me as I was reading through on the story. I'm asking you this, you know, just in an analytical way to get your thoughts on football, not like in an if-only kind of a way, but just looking at it analytically here, do you get the sense, had your career come along another 10, 15 years later, there might have been a little bit higher of a ceiling? You look at the guys not too long after the turn of the millennium here, whether it be Brian Westbrook or some of the guys like that have paved the way for sort of the Chris Johnsons of today. It seems like guys who are sort of pegged to be somewhat in the scat back mold, teams don't hold that against them as much vis-a-vis the perception of their ceiling. Do you get the sense that you might have been a little bit ahead of your time as far as what you were able to do?
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, guys like Eric Metcalf and guys like Dave Meggett, those were the, mm-hmm. in fact, Dave Meggett and I, we had the same agent. And, you know, those were the guys that really, really launched it to actually give us little guys an opportunity to get in the backfield and do what we do. I would have never thought in a million years, well, not me, because I knew where my expectations with myself was. I'm talking about the naysayers. No one would have ever thought in a million years that I would be in a backfield, a running backfield in the National Football League. But I got an opportunity to do that. And, you know, yeah, I tell you what, the scat back today, you got to be more than just a scat back. You got to be pretty much a multi, like a Chris Johnson. I mean, the guy can do it all. You know, the one-on-one in open field, there's no one out there. I don't care who you are. If it was Deion Sanders one-on-one, he's not going to catch this guy. So, I mean, I give these young men a lot of credit for with what they are capable of doing now. I do wonder what would I be doing at the way things are now. I ask that question myself today, and I just don't know. I really don't. You know, just technology is advanced. Way of getting into shape is advanced. It's a totally different world, you know.
It's interesting you mention those names, and I, as a lifelong Browns fan, of course, you know, Eric Metcalf back in the day, maybe a little bit misused with the whole Metcalf up the middle thing, but you're right when you mention Metcalf and Meggett, that those guys were starting to proliferate in your time as well, no question. But another football theory question I'd like to ask you, since you mentioned them in the book, I've had a long time belief, I don't know if you subscribe to it or not, but that the Hall of Fame should perhaps be open to specialists. If we were going to open it up to, say, great coordinators or great special teams players, I can't think of anybody that would go in for special teams ahead of Steve Tasker. Do you see guys like that as being, again, he only did the one thing, but he did it at perhaps a higher level than just about anybody else. So what are your thoughts on guys like that and whether or not that would be enough in your estimation for Canton?
Well, personally, I had the honor and the pleasure of not only being his teammate, and I'm talking about Steve Tasker, but being an adversary, going playing against him as well. Guys like that, they stick out like sore thumbs because the next thing is they're making play after play after play. You talk about another guy that I played alongside and against, and that is Mel Gray, perhaps one of the best return men ever to lace up a pair of cleats. And you would never think by looking at his stature that this is one of the best return men ever to play in the National Football League. And he should be inducted one day. And he was nothing but special teams. He didn't play offense or defense. All he did was return punts and kicks. But almost no one did it better than Mel Gray. And I had the honor to play alongside and against this guy. And I learned a lot. I learned how to be a pro because of the Steve Taskers, their work ethic. Mel Gray, their work ethics. It's nothing is handed to you. Especially when you go at that level, and especially if you're a special teams guy, you're trying out pretty much every day, all eyes are always on you because you only have this one job to do. But it's probably returning punts is one of the hardest jobs next to quarterback in the National Football League. And anybody wants to debate that, I can debate that all day. I know from firsthand. I know what it takes. So, those guys, they are going to be noticed more and more. Now, because they made this new rule, which I really think is pretty sad, and I think that they just eliminated a job in regards to moving the kickoff up 5 yards, if they were going to do that, all they need to do now is take the ball and start at the 20 and eliminate the kickoff return. I mean, it's really sad that they would eliminate a job like that. Now, all they're going to do, literally, I really believe if they keep this rule in play, that they are officially eliminated a job in the National Football League for a specialist guy. So
I think you're right about that, and my bet is they're going to repeal it at the earliest possible opportunity. I think they're seeing just now how ill-considered it was. Vernon, in the remaining 3 to 4 minutes we got left here, I know I definitely want to talk workouts with you because you've put into place what you learned from Walter Payton and others, and you're disseminating it to folks. Of course, we talked about before, www.vernonturner.com. That's where people can find your book, The Next Level, A Game I Had to Play. But additionally, information that you have to help other people out with workouts and get across some ideas on physical excellence.
Well, that's the thing. All throughout my career, I've always had, because I was a workaholic. That was one of the reasons why I made it in the National Football League. And any other level before that is because I outworked my opponents. And I used to wake up in the middle of the night, set my alarm clock for 2 a.m. in the morning because I knew my opponents were asleep, and I used to do workouts. And then the training regimens that I did receive from the great Walter Sweetness Payton, I wouldn't recommend his regimen on my worst enemy. Those were workouts from hell. But it got me mentally, not only physically tough, but mentally tough. And those are training regimens that I do share on my website, and I do provide athletic training to the athletes out there. And if you're interested, just go to VernonTurner. www.vernonturner.com. In addition, with my book, you can get it in Nook, and you can also get it in Kindle. And it also has a limited edition, which has more photos and a lot more trinkets involved added to the limited edition. So I'm excited in regards to where my product, because I've gotten so far, I've gotten just about 100% feedback of positive, and that warms my heart tremendously, because I was just looking to get one person, and I tell you what, the feedback has been so touching to me that I really do appreciate everyone's support. I really do.
Vernon, it's a great story. It really touched us greatly, and I just want to tell you, I'll bring it by telling you this. You know, the form of immortality that attaches itself to guys like you who've been in the league. Myself and my producer, Steve Servillo, he was in town for one of my fantasy football drafts this year. We happened to be over down in the commissioner's basement there. Wife is a huge Bills fan. He sees a picture of the 1990 Bills hanging on the wall there, team photo. Oh, my God, Rick, check this out. There's Vernon Turner. I mean, God only knows how many rec rooms in America, you know, that's being played out in, Vernon. But, you know, your career is continuing to be celebrated in that way, and it's a great story, and we'd certainly love to have you back on and talk more with you about it as your journey continues, sir.
It's an absolute pleasure to be on your show, and I look forward to speaking to you again, Rick. Thank you.
I'm really honored. Thank you very much, Vernon. The great Vernon Turner, everybody. Appreciate having had him on. Thank you for tuning in. Mini episode number 13 of the FDH Lounge. We'll be catching up with you, I believe, later in the week with actor Peter Scolari. Good night, everybody.